This MusicAndSports.net Spotlight is brought to you by Piano Finders, member of the National Association of Music Merchants. Karen Lyle with you again, and we're going to hear from Barry Zito, three-time All-Star, great player, two-time World Series champion, Cy Young Award winner, who pitched 15 seasons from the Oakland A's and San Francisco Giants. In preparation for his life after baseball, Barry dove into the national music scene and now has an album titled No Secrets.
I guess my heart, it lied to me. It told me, yeah, that I could be the one to just move on. Tell me why these feelings are so strong enough to wreck.
Barry came from a musical family. His dad was an arranger, conductor, and band leader for Nat King Cole.
My father would write out the parts for each person in the band. One of the best stories, I think, for Nat, though, was there's a famous song called Nature Boy, which is, you know, it's a jazz standard now, and it's been cut by many people. And my father and Nat were hanging out. I believe they were on the road, and somebody came up to Nat and said, hey, Nat, there's this kind of strange-looking man who has this song that he wants to play for you. And, you know, Nat was a really great guy, and Nat said, you know, all right, well, let's see what he's got. And it was the guy who wrote Nature Boy, who I believe was homeless at the time. And he came in and played it on piano and sang it. And my father and Nat and a couple other people were around the piano. And Nat loved it so much that he cut it. And that song, you know, from that day forward has gone on to be a huge song.
Barry took his guitar with him when he was on the road.
For me, music was always an escape. It was something that I would do to clear my head. I would just be home playing acoustic guitar. I started playing when I was 21. And I knew I was going to be in hotels and things like that playing baseball. And So for me, it was come home, play at night, you know, play on the road, bring the guitar, do those types of things. And, you know, it took many years to become proficient enough to actually start playing other people's music and things I could hear on the radio. But no matter what skill level I was at, it always created this catharsis for me.
Music and sports are connected for Barry.
There's a lot of similarities between pitching and music. I mean, you have to get your self-consciousness completely out of there. And stay in what you're doing. And when you're performing on stage, I mean, it's about giving. It's not about receiving something from someone. And, you know, that for me is, it's a challenge every time I do it, but that's why I love it. And, you know, telling a story set to melody is probably the coolest thing you can do when you can touch someone's heart and make somebody feel like they can relate to a story that you wrote about yourself and or your life. You know, things are universal in that.
Thanks so much, Barry. This is Karen Lyle with you here on MusicAndSports.net Spotlight. Special thanks to our sponsor, Piano Finders, a NAM member bringing these stories to music and sports fans globally on Sports Byline USA.
All right, thank you so much for that. Welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, nationally syndicated out of San Francisco and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. It's 9:40 on a Tuesday. That's when we check in with our friends from SalesportTalk.com. And we have Patty Mangan in studio. Patty, how are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you, Rick?
I'm doing fine. Let's try that again. I'm sorry. How are you?
I'm great.
Okay. And we also have Captain Donald Lawson in studio this time. Captain, how are you?
Doing great. How are you doing today?
Good. But first, we're going to go ahead and say hello on the phone to Karen Lyle. Karen, what's going on?
Well, I am just saying hello to you because I can't ever resist an opportunity to say hello to you on a Tuesday morning, even if I'm not there in the studio myself.
All right. So you're going to hang around or you're getting out of Dodge now?
You know, I am definitely passing the torch to Patty, who's going to co-host with you, and saying hello to Donald, who I hope to sail with soon.
All right, great stuff. Let's talk about Donald for a second, because the captain on the Dark Seas Project, it's a foundation, traveling the West Coast this month. Tell us a little bit more about what all that is, Captain.
Yeah. So we were able to acquire our boat. We're going to rename the Defiant pretty soon, down in San Diego. And part of the mission has been to share the boat and the nonprofit work we're doing as we move up the coastline. The trip also serves as a training opportunity for us to get to know the boat, learn how she reacts to certain conditions. And so we made a few stops already. We stopped in Newport Beach, met with some folks at Newport Beach Harbor Yacht Club, and then Now we're up here at CYC, Corinthian Yacht Club. We're going to do a presentation there tomorrow night. We're going to review the trips and the project and that kind of stuff.
Yes. So my friend Shelley is the one that helped arrange your show, your speaking engagement tomorrow night, and also to help. Did you find the crew that you needed to get up the coast?
Yeah. So part of the struggle was there's a couple points on the map where the weather's really, really bad in the north. And so we initially were going to come up on the 11th, but there, that storm out there, 40 knots of breeze on the nose and big waves off of, Point Conception, I think it's called?
Yes.
That wasn't going to happen. So we did instead. We waited till the weather turned around a little bit. We actually got a southerly breeze at Point Conception. And we were able to fly by it. And then from there, we started hitting north. We got hit by 30 knots of breeze. So we pulled into Santa Cruz for a couple hours, let that pass by, and then we kept going all the way up. But sailing upwind on this boat, it can do it, but it's not designed for that purpose. And so we managed to get that trip done, but I don't intend to do that passage again on that direction.
Right.
It was almost 20 years ago when I was doing this show, and we had a guy named Bruce Schwab on who was doing the Vendée Global solo race, and he would call me once a week on satellite phone, and it was fascinating to hear his mood and good days and bad days. But Bruce Schwab is no stranger to you. How has he helped you?
Man, Bruce Schwab. So I'm in debt to Bruce because he gave me my first offshore experience on his Open 60 Ocean Planet on that kind of boat. I had sailed offshore before, but never on a high performance race boat. And since then, Bruce has been like my mentor, my guide. I mean, even this project here, a lot of the stuff we're doing was based off of him and his suggestions. And when I decided to start doing records, because I'm not sure most people who are listening don't know why records versus racing. You know, racing, I could tell you when the next Vendée Globe race is going to take place. It's going to be November of 24. You be there or not be there. But for records, elite sailors do these records because these passages are very, very difficult. And you're racing against the past, the present, and the future. And so the goal, one of the things that Bruce instilled in me was, hey, get the fastest boat you can get, and then go out there and challenge it and see what you can do. And then if it works out, it works out. If it doesn't, you can always go back and try again. And that's how we do it.
Yeah. So on the Vendée Globe, are you lecturing and doing some media up to that particular race, or is it all the quest that you're after, the record-breaking?
Yeah, we've transitioned totally to record-breaking. Mm-hmm. The boat we have, for those who don't know, we acquired the former Groupama 2, which is also known in the States as Maya Merlot, and she's the fastest 60-foot boat ever built. There's no 60-foot sailboat faster than her. And nationally, she's the fastest sailboat in the country. And globally, she's the fifth fastest ocean-going boat behind the giant maxi 100-foot trimarans.
Okay.
And so having this boat gave us the opportunity to say, you know what, maybe one day we'll do the Vendée. And then it sounds bizarre to say, like, maybe one day, but having this boat, we can challenge for every single world record and have a chance to break them. And so that puts me kind of now as the only American competing with the French in this genre.
Mm-hmm.
And also makes me the only American who actually has the ability to actually compete for world records. It's a really, really elite group of people who do this kind of stuff. And sometimes I have to pinch myself to think I'm competing against the elite French sailors, and it's just me. Mm-hmm. So it's mind-boggling.
Wow, bon voyage, huh?
Si, oui.
A couple more questions for our Captain Donald Lawson, who is also the chair of the United States Sailing's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Committee. And that's something that, you know, non-traditional sailing communities like. And honestly, I grew up middle-class white guy in the Bay Area, and I thought sailing was out of my reach.
Yeah.
You know, And so I think about people of color, people. So what is it about sailing now that seems so elitist that now maybe is more open?
Yeah, excellent question. And the DEI work, I always stress people, the sailing community never excluded anyone. They just didn't include anyone. Okay, so it's very
semantics.
It matters because it's not like a Jackie Robinson situation where you have to integrate the sport.
Mm.
It's more about reaching out to people who don't traditionally have opportunity to do it and providing a platform for them to do it. And so U.S. Sailing, led by Richard Jespin, the board president, you know, his goal has been to simply make it more accessible. And so when you think of traditional sailing in the past, you know, you had the Olympics, you had the America's Cup, that's it. Then the Volvo Ocean Race came along, the Vendée came along, and now record breaking's around. And so now there's more opportunities, there's more diversity in the events, which then gives sailors the opportunity to now pick and choose where they fit into the slots. Mm. And so my job is to present this to the general public, show the general public, hey, sailing's for everyone, not just if you're a middle-class white guy. It's, mm-hmm. it's for women. It's for LGBTQ plus community. It's for my culture. It's for everyone.
Yeah. So talk about a little bit about the speed of the boat
A
second. I'm sorry to go off that, but earlier you said it's the fastest, and I want to know what you're talking about.
Okay, so I know there's sailors listening, and they know what I'm going to say here. The boat top speed recorded is 42 knots.
Wow.
Under wind power. Okay. Mm-hmm. Most boats can probably peak around 30 if they're lucky, if you're pushing extremely hard.
Yeah.
The fastest boats in the country besides mine are the Mod 70s, like Team Argo, which is on the East Coast, Orion, so both Mod 70s. So they're 70 feet long. I'm 60 feet long, so I'm 10 feet shorter. Mm-hmm. The difference is that my boat is lighter at 6 tons. I carry way more sail area for my lengths. My riding moment's way higher. And in addition to that, my boat was designed purely for reaching in light to medium range wind up to 15 knots. In that wind range, I'm about 5, 10, 15% faster than the Mod 70 is. And so this boat, for example, the West Coast guys, holds the Transpac race record of 4 days and 6 hours. And they beat Comanche with the big 100-foot monohull with Ken Reed and those guys. They beat them by a couple days. Wow. And they gave them a head start. And so they passed them by Catalina. So when you look at nationally, there just isn't anything like this here. This boat was built and designed in France. And it's built for one thing, to be fast. And so the nickname of the boat is Magic Carpet because it has basically no wake behind it. And so when we were out there sailing, man, I'm trying to slow the boat down more than I'm trying to speed the boat up. So it's a totally different mindset.
That's amazing, yeah. It's like F-15 pilots have told me all they try to do is keep their jet from going into a tailspin.
Exactly. So you should be a military analogy. So this would be more like a F-22 Raptor, if you want to use a fighter plane, not just because it's stealthy and sleek, but what happens is that F-22s can do what's called super cruise. Without their afterburners, they can go at Mach 1. My boat does the same thing. It can go
Mach 1?
Not Mach 1, but it can go super fast without pushing it. And so your goal is to throttle it back. Like, hey, relax, girl. Mm. Relax. It's like a Bronco. Relax. We're good here.
So can you tell us, of all your time on the high seas and, you know, 25,000 miles, a moment of great peril?
Oh, yeah. Well, so 25,000 miles, we stopped counting at 25,000 miles because it's just not worth the time anymore to keep track of it because I don't need to prove it anymore.
Sure.
But the scariest moments for me have been when I hit a whale. Actually, me and Bruce, talk about a scary moment. We were sailing off of Cape Hatteras, North Carolina, heading south, probably doing about 25 knots surfing waves. And we're switching watch. Bruce goes downstairs. I come up. 5 minutes later, we hit a whale at full speed. And we bounce off. I jack my face up, my body up. Bruce pops out and says, hey, you okay? I'm like, yeah. All right. You'll be fine. We'll pull into Charleston. He goes to sleep. And we pull into Charleston. And the boat, the keel was box has shifted significantly from that impact. So we had to get that fixed. But that was pretty terrifying.
Right. But have you ever gone into the drink?
No. So knock on wood or whatever you have here. I've never flipped a large multi-hull before. I never will, because what's the point of having a multi-hull if you're going to flip it?
Right.
I've broken masts. I've run aground. I can tell you stories about, we started one race, the Solomon's Invitational, 1 year. And there's a shoal near Naval Academy, and we're trying to cut that angle, and our daggerboard slammed into the sea floor, and we're done for the season. That was it. We won 2 championships, I think 2010-2011. We could have 4, but I ran aground one time, and I broke the mast at the Governor Cup. Another one. So,
and this is someone who knows what they're doing.
Yeah. So, when it comes down to it, this is Formula One racing on the ocean. You know, a lot of this is going to be, people are not going to like this, but not every aspect of sailing is Formula One. Okay.
Right.
A lot of people, everyone tosses that around like, hey, Formula One is for the elite sailors doing elite things. And so when it comes down to it, there are certain boats that only the best sailors can sail on. And so we have it. And so literally I get trained by the former crew all the time. Jay Davis, shout out to him. He spent a week with me going through the boat. Ari Means, who's a navigator, is probably one of the top navigators ever live. You know, he's one of the guys helping me get the boat together. And so when it comes down to it, you know, my boat can do what the America's Cup boats do in the harbor. Mm-hmm. It was designed to do that. But it also can go across the oceans like the Vendée boats go. Wow. And no other boat can even do that in this country. Wow. So just think about that for a second.
It's great stuff. Find out more at sailsporttalk.com. Thank you, Captain Donald Lawson and Patty Mangan, for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you. Always a pleasure, and we'll see you guys next time, all right?
Yes.
Great stuff. I'm Rick Tuttle. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come on back on Sports Byline.